The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Thanks, Peter. Well, these days we get to fly planes a lot. Just think about it, that's 500,000 kilograms of metal in the air. How does that happen? And yet when they do the flight safety announcement, none of us are listening. When they tell us to look around for the nearest exit, none of us are looking around. And when they tell us to put our phones on flight mode, I'm sure most of us here are not putting our phones on flight mode. See, air safety announcements, we've heard them all before. What can they possibly tell us that we need to know? But earlier this year in the USA, Southwest Airlines, flying from Dallas to New York, had a crash. They had an emergency landing. Engine blew up, shrapnel went into the window, killed one passenger, depressurized the cabin, and sure enough, the oxygen mask fell down, and this photo shows everyone put it on the wrong way. Every single person has it over their mouth and not their nose, as was demonstrated in the air safety announcement that none of us listened to. See, the air safety announcement, we've heard it all before. What can we learn from it that we possibly would need to know? And that's how Christmas feels to us. It's Christmas time. Again, I've heard it all before. Baby Jesus in a manger with donkeys, cows and lambs, blah, blah, blah. I've heard it all before. What can I learn from Christmas that I possibly need to know? Well, that's what we're going to do today. I'm going to give a short 20-minute talk, followed by question time from you guys. And I've called my talk, Three Shocking Facts About Christmas That They Do Not Want You to Know. So let's go through the three shocking facts. Shocking fact number one. Because of Christmas, we actually have way more dignity than we could possibly imagine. Because of Christmas, we have way more dignity than we can possibly imagine. This is the poo emoji. Or if you're in the USA, it would be the poop emoji. And it's become an official part of our lexicon. It's become an official Unicode emoji. And the charm of the poo emoji is the dissonance of images. Because on the one hand, you have a happy, cute, smiling face. But on the other hand, it's a pile of poo, and we're not quite sure what to do with poo. Poo makes us uncomfortable. If you've ever been to Japan, you know they have these high-tech toilet seats that just do everything. And one feature is, see that button with the music sign on it? Toilet seats in Japan will play music. Why? To cover up the noise of you doing a poo. See, poo makes us uncomfortable. There's something undignified about poo. I work one day a week as a doctor, and doctors and nurses, you know, we can handle anything, blood, brains, gore, except poo. When there's poo, we all run, we all take a back seat, and the most junior person on the team, me, I'm the one that has to clean up the poo. Now think about it, why is that? Because there's something undignified about poo, isn't there? And yet at Christmas time, the person at the top of the pecking order, Jesus, the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, becomes one of us. And not just one of us, but a baby. And not just a baby, but a baby in a manger surrounded by poo. And not just a baby in a manger, but a baby himself who would have been covered in poo. And so Jesus Christ is saying at Christmas time, there's something dignified about being a human, no matter what state or stage of life you find yourself in. See, when I was a parent of newborn kids, I hated changing the nappies. That's one thing I never got used to. But I used to make a joke with my kids, you know, one day you'll be doing this for me. And on the one hand, that's funny, but on the other hand, it's not that funny. Because studies show that one in two of us are going to end life the way we began it, with Alzheimer's, in nappies, covered in poo, and the other one in two of us, we have to care for that other person. So in my marriage, because I played a lot of rugby, I took a lot of head knocks in my first 40 years of life, I know which one in two I'm going to be. And for one in two of us, that's how we're going to end life. And so Jesus comes to us as a baby, covered in poo, not talking, not walking, affirming us at no matter what stage of life, we have dignity. Because my grandmother ended her life not talking. My grandfather ended his life not walking. And I'll end my life in nappies, covered in poo. And Jesus says, that's okay. There is dignity no matter what stage or state of life we might find ourselves in. So that's the first shocking fact about Christmas. We have way more dignity than we could dare imagine. The second shock of Christmas is this. There is such a thing as evil. Evil is a real thing. This is my family. That's my wife, Stephanie. We've been married 22 years. They're my three boys, Toby, Cooper and Jonty, now 9, 7, 11. This is a recent photo of them at a wedding, and you can see they are high fun, high energy. Now, one night I read them the bedtime story around 8 o'clock at night, and then they came into my bed at 10 o'clock at night and said, "Dad, we can't sleep. Read us another story." And I said, "I've got a better idea than that. If you can't sleep, I think you are now of age. Let me introduce you to WWE. So I pulled out my laptop, I fired up YouTube, and I showed them pro wrestling for the first time. They had never seen this before. So I got to show them, this is them coming off the ropes. This is John Cena. He's a good guy. And this is The Undertaker. He's the bad guy. And we were watching one of the wrestling matches, and suddenly the bed began to shake. You could hear this rattling noise. And my oldest son, Toby, says to me, "Dad, what is that noise?" And I turned around and I said, "I think it's your youngest brother, Jonty." And he was shaking with so much adrenaline because this was such a sensory overload for him. He had never seen anything like this. But at the end, I had to break the news to them. I said, "You know what? This is all fake. It's make-believe. No one's really getting hurt. They're not really hitting each other. And the bad guys, they're just pretending to be bad guys. There is no such thing as wrestling. It's all make-believe. They're pretending to fight." And for a long time, we told ourselves that same story about the human condition. You know what? There's no such thing as evil. It's just a social, political, religious construct. In the end, we're just good people. We might make some bad decisions in the end, but in the end, we're good people, so we should all be able to get along. But the Christmas story tells us something different. Because the Christmas story tells us that when Jesus was born, King Herod, the king of the time, was so threatened by the birth of Jesus, he ordered the death of every baby child under the age of 2, just to be safe, to make sure he killed Jesus. And when I first heard that story, I thought, nah. That couldn't really have happened. Like, violence like that does not exist. We're humans. We're too civilized for that. But I just went on a tour this year of Israel and Palestine, and they told me that King Herod really was a bad guy. He was such a megalomaniac. This is Herodium. It's basically a man-made mountain which Herod turned into a palace, a fortified city, and in the end, his throne and his burial site. And when he died, he ordered the death of his own sons because he didn't want them to take the throne. He really, really, really was a bad guy. And Christmas says evil really exists. There are bad people. And we try to tell ourselves, no, we're all good people. We should be able to get along. But I lived in America when 9/11 happened. And I remember Time magazine on the back page in the essay section, Lance Moreau finally said, "You know what? This is evil. Evil really exists." And then we had the Bali bombings. And just a few weeks ago, we had the synagogue shootings in Philadelphia. And we started to tell ourselves, you know what? Evil really exists. But then we have a problem. If we say, you know what? Evil does exist. People do bad things. And people are bad. We get into the opposite problem now, where we become tribes again, of us versus them, where we're the good guys and everyone else, well, they're the bad guys. So how can we believe in evil and still get along with everyone around us? Well, this brings us to the third shocking fact that Christmas gives us. And the third shocking fact is this. The line between good and evil runs through our own hearts. The line between good and evil runs through our own hearts. Many years ago, I was in Africa on a medical mission. And in Africa, because of the mosquitoes and malaria, you're meant to sleep with these mosquito nets over your bed. And every night you got to crawl in really neatly and quickly to make sure a mosquito doesn't get in while you're inside the net. And I remember one night I fell asleep. I was falling asleep with a netting just over my face. And you see all the mosquitoes outside of that trying to get in. And suddenly, boom, there was this big, hairy spider on the outside of the net, just at face level. I thought, it's okay, it's only the size of my face, but it's outside the net. It is okay, just trust the net. And he will go away. He's more scared of you than you of him. He will go away. But unfortunately, the next night I came in, boom, there he was again. I thought, it's all right, he's more scared of you than you are of him. He will go away. But boom, the next night, he was still there. And I think, it's okay, trust the netting, he will go away. And finally my roommate said to me, Sam, I don't know how you do it. How do you put up with that spider on the inside of your net? I thought, what? I said, no, he's on the outside. He goes, no, have a look. He was on the inside, and ba 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 ba. What I thought was on the outside was on the inside. I had a problem. And that's the whole premise of this movie, isn't it? When a stranger calls, the phone call rings, and you think the killer is outside the house, but ba 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 ba. The killer is inside the house. And that is the human condition. As you know, this is Alexander Solzhenitsyn. He was a Russian citizen, a Russian patriot, fought for Russia in the war, but just said one or two disloyal things about Stalin, and he found himself in a gulag, in a concentration camp, in a working prison in Siberia, where people were froze, starved, or were beaten to death. And he grew to hate his captors. He grew to hate the prison guards. And suddenly, he had this epiphany. He had this Copernican moment where he realized, you know what? They are me and I am them. If it was just a small change of circumstances, I would be one of them and they would be one of me. And that's when he realized evil wasn't out there, it was inside his very own heart. And his famous quote in his writings is this, "The line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being." And Jesus would agree, because Jesus has that famous saying, why do you notice the speck of dirt in your brother's eye? You don't notice the plank that's in your own eye. In other words, don't look for the evil that's out there. Evil is in you. It's in your very own heart. And that's the great awakening. And we might say to Jesus, but I've never killed anyone. And Jesus says, yeah, but in your heart, you've hated. And you would say to Jesus, but I've never stolen anything. And Jesus would say in the Sermon on the Mount, yeah, but in your heart, you've envied, haven't you? And you would say, but I've never cheated on my wife. And Jesus would say, yeah, but you have looked at other women, haven't you? In other words, the evil isn't out there. It cuts through your very own heart. And liberal writers are agreeing. This is Jonathan Haidt, a liberal secular atheist Jew. And his latest book that's just come out, which I think should be compulsory reading for everyone, The Coddling of the American Mind. The subtitle, How Good Intentions and Bad Ideas Are Setting Up a Generation for Failure. And he said one of the problems that's going on, besides the whole culture of safetyism and helicopter parenting and just too many devices when kids aren't ready for it, is we've created a culture of us versus them, and we have witch hunts as if the people around us are the problem, when he says we need to learn from Alexander Solzhenitsyn and look within. Maybe the line dividing good and evil begins in here rather than out there. That's Jonathan Haidt. This is David Brooks, who writes regularly for the New York Times. This just came out in October, the new Cold War, how we're so partisan now between left and right and red and blue and conservatives and progressives. He says that's the new Cold War. We're so partisan, it's us versus them, good versus bad. He says we need to learn from Alexander Solzhenitsyn and realise actually the line between good and evil begins in here, in our very own hearts. And that is the shocking fact of Christmas. Because when Jesus was born, this is what the angels announced to his parents, you are to give him the name Jesus, which means he saves, because he will save his people from their sins. That is the most shocking thing of Christmas. Jesus came not just to be a good teacher, not just to be a drinking buddy, he was all of those things, but more. But in the end, he came to save us from our sins. And on the one hand, that is most empowering, hopeful message to proclaim, because there is hope no matter where we find ourselves. But on the other hand, it requires us to humble ourselves to say, you know what? The problem begins here, not out there. And the problem is so big that Jesus had to come covered in poo to be one of me, because in the end, he needed to save me from the line between good and evil that exists in my own heart. So the three shocking facts about Christmas. Jesus came as one of us, so we have way more dignity than we dare imagine. But also evil is real, so that where there's it's not just a construct. Evil is real. But the third shocking fact is this. The line between good and evil cuts through our very own hearts. Now, earlier this year, I had a very interesting experience. As you know, I work one day a week as a doctor, and I've told you I work as a surgical assistant, and I've told you before, all that means is I hold the leg while the surgeon operates on it. And I've told you before, the dynamic is the nurses look at the surgeon and think, wow, I can see how that would take 6 years of med school. The dynamic is the nurses look at the anaesthetist and think, whoa, I can see how that takes 6 years of med school. And then they look at me holding the leg and think, how does that take 6 years of med school? Like a trained blind monkey can do what that guy could do. And in fact, a trained blind monkey would do a better job. And that's why I always turn up to work, just so they never find out how much better it went without me. Hey, that went better without an assistant. Do we really need an assistant? Well, just this year, I thought I'd go for a knee operation from my very own surgeon. And so, because I'm a doctor, you get professional privileges. They let you go first on the list so you don't have to fast as long, and you're done and it's lunchtime, you can go home. And so there I'm lying in bed in the patient gear, ready to be first on the list. And then they said, and then there was a surgeon, there was a anaesthetist, all the nurses were lined up waiting, and then someone said, where's the assistant? And everyone laughs, ha ha, he's in the bed. But you know, the surgeon says, I've got someone else to cover. But half an hour later, this person didn't turn up. He had forgotten. So the surgeon looks at me and says, well, you know what you're going to have to do. And I thought, oh, okay. So I had to get out of my patient gear, put on the doctor gear, do the whole list while fasting, jump back into the bed at the end of the list, and they operate on me. And it was all fun and games, except 2 weeks later, I got a very bad knee infection. Very bad knee infection. So that's me in hospital with a knee infection. And it did not get better. I went to theatre once, it didn't get better. Oh, I went to theatre another time, it didn't get better. And what I thought would just take one day, took another day, took another day, took another day. I ended up in hospital for 16 days. I lost 5 kilograms of weight from just 2 weeks of bed rest. I had a knee that wouldn't bend, that I couldn't even walk on when I walked out. And they say, so this is what it felt like. I felt like I was falling down a hole, but I didn't know where the bottom was going to be. And then when you hit the bottom of the hole, you feel like you can't climb out of the hole. And then when you do, you think, whoa. You know, you just feel like thanking God you got out of the hole. But, you know, they have a saying. You can't climb out of the hole until you know you're in a hole. And I think that's a message of Christmas. It's a message of hope. But it's only a message of hope if we know how far we have fallen. And that's why Jesus had come as one of us, not just to be a good teacher, not just to be a drinking buddy, but someone who in the end would pull us out of the hole. And so the shocking fact of Christmas is this. We're way more dignity than we dared imagine, but we're way more fallen than we dare admit. But at the same time, there is way more hope than we could possibly ask for.
In light of the facts of Christmas, how do the decorations in silks today relate to our Christmas celebrations?
Okay. Oh, that's way out of my skill set. I don't know the history of the origins, but that, you know, I always have a positive view because in the end, symbols are symbols and we can always appropriate symbols and they can always, we can reinterpret them and they can have a meaning that's appropriate with our message. So I don't see it as a bad thing, but that's the hope. It's the final bit. There's a hope.
Okay. Christmas is supposed to be a wonderful, joyful time, especially for Christians. What happens if you don't feel joyful? Should we pretend? Should we be honest about it? Is there a different way?
Yeah. I think it's that the mismatch between the reality and the emotions, and Christmas is always like that. It's asking you to feel something you don't feel. I just watched the boxing movie Creed 2, and the whole point of Creed 2, the whole driving thing, he says, I'm the champion, like he's got the belt, he's beaten the guy, but I don't feel like a champion. And it's because of that he keeps driving himself, because he wants to feel like a champion. And then, you know, the advice he gets from the coach and the parents is, or his parent, is don't prove it to other people, you have to prove it to yourself, which is classic Western Hollywood-ism, which is the worst advice you can give because you're your own worst judge. You can never prove to yourself. You actually need the status and the honour to come from someone else. So I guess what I'm saying about Christmas is this. We're told all these facts about Christmas, but our feelings don't catch up. But I would say maybe that's okay. Just remind ourselves of the reality of Christmas and we don't have to prove to ourselves something that's not there, but just concentrate on the facts of Christmas, that Jesus Christ, Son of God, became one of us, affirms us in our dignity, and had to come more than just to be a drinking buddy, but to save us. And so there's always hope because it's based on the person and work of Jesus rather than my own person and work and my own feelings.
I was interested to know whether the surgeon admitted, you know, any mistake on his part, given what you said, the sort of the line of good and evil cuts through everyone.
Yeah. I thought I knew surgeons, but I got a whole new window into the mind of a surgeon. Like a surgeon to be where they are. You know, they do that study of CEOs and by and large they fit a psychopathic profile because they're very low in empathy. And you think, you know what? But that is how they get to be where they are. And surgeons, by and large, fit a profile of narcissists, very proud, very insecure at the same time, and very low in empathy. Like, how else do you plunge a knife into someone? Like, if you're empathetic, you can't do that. So I got a window into my surgeon's psyche because I was a complication he did not want, and I was in there for 2 weeks, and I noticed him doing his ward rounds, and I knew he was doing ward rounds, and he would avoid my bed. Like, I knew it, which is what all surgeons do because they don't know what to do with failure. They actually don't know what to do when they're not in control. And I heard in the M&M meeting, the morbidity mortality meeting, so once a month, surgeons have to present all their stats and they have to present their complications. And he had to present my complication and he put the blame on me. He said, oh, that's Sam. He was the most non-compliant patient. So I think in his heart of hearts, he would not admit failure or error. The problem was mine. There's no empathy. And I actually told this to some guy, and he said, your surgeon, he's still a boy. He's never grown up. And apparently, men to grow up, and this is getting so profound. Am I allowed to be profound?
A little.
Okay. Well, okay. He said, well, until you realize life is about serving and dying for those you love, you stay a boy, and for you it's all about winning, being in control, and accumulating toys. And he said, your surgeon is a boy, he's never grown up, because for him it's all about winning, accumulating, and being in control. And at that moment he had lost, and he wasn't in control, he couldn't control the infection of the disease, and he stayed a boy.
Wait, building on that question, can you give a definition of evil?
Mm.
Is it the absence of good or love, or can you improve on that?
Yeah, so evil, so as you know, in philosophy there's a debate, is it a thing, is it not a thing? If it's not a thing, then we can say it's the absence of good, the privation of good, where there should have been a good apple, but there's no good apple, so that's bad. That's one idea, and I think we need a plethora of metaphors. The other one is, it's a thing, so if it's a thing, what is it? Well, it's a corruption, it's a distortion of good. So this is a rotten apple, because it's corrupted, it's distorted. And then I think there's a third complementary way of looking at it, and I'm getting this from Timothy Keller, Making Sense of God. And well, then you've only moved the goalpost back one step. If you're saying it's an absence of good or a distortion of good, what is good? Like, what is good? Now, is good a thing? What is good? And good only makes sense if we say something has been designed for a purpose. So if I say this is a good watch, you know what I mean. Because it tells the time. It has been designed for a purpose. This is a good microphone. Why? Because it's amplifying my speech. That's the design. It's a bad microphone if it doesn't do that. It's a bad watch if it doesn't do that. And so the whole idea, good and evil can only exist if we say there's a design, there's a purpose, there's a designer, there's a God. That's how we know what good and evil is. So we live according to the design, the purpose that God has programmed into the cosmic order and humans, then we're living a good life. Or if you're like King Herod killing babies, well, that's going against the design of God, and that's an evil, bad thing to do. Okay, so, yeah, it's just a comment, not a question. The quote from one of the astronauts from the Apollo missions, what's remarkable is not that man walked on the moon, but God walked on Earth. Yeah, and I think that's the shocking fact of Christmas. And covered in poo. Not just walked on Earth, but came helpless as a babe covered in poo.
How does being a Christian impact on your professional identity as a doctor?
How does being a Christian impact on my professional identity? I think it allows me, the dynamic is, being a Christian allows me to enjoy all the good gifts that God gives me and enjoy them for what they are. Don't make less of them than what they are. Oh, I'm a Christian, I'm too holy, I'm too pure to be a doctor. Money is evil, status is evil, pride is evil. I repent of being a doctor. So that would be to make too little a thing of what God has given me. But then if I make too much of what it is and make it my source of, I guess, status, security, honour, then it will destroy me and I will destroy it, because I'll ask too much of it and it will ask too much of me, because I'm asking it to do what only God can do for me, which is to save me, to give me status, security, freedom and honour, love and belonging. So if I ask medicine to do that for me, then I'm making an idol that will own me, and an idol that will one day destroy me. And being in the medical profession, I can actually see what it does to most of my colleagues.
So with that, I mean, by extension, I'm sure the same thing applies to the law. So would you say that sort of means that you have a healthy kind of detachment to it?
Yeah, healthy detachment to my profession, to sports, and also to parenting. Because I can enjoy my children just for who they are. They don't have to win on the AFL field to prove I'm an amazing dad. They can just enjoy sports for what it is, a good gift from a good God to enjoy. If you make less of it than what it is, then you're missing out on the outdoors and the health that God has blessed you with. But if you make too much of it, you know, this is my status, my honour, my dignity, well, you will destroy the game because it's no longer fun, and it will destroy you.
Thank you, Sam.
No worries.
I think some of our national sporting teams are putting that into practice.
They're making too little of it.
Yeah. Okay. Any other quick last comments, questions from the floor for Sam? No? All right. Well, let's thank him again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.